Hello, this is the recording number 2 of Gygax's Saga of Old City. It is an annotated recording of the text. This is page 17, chapter 2. Justice was swift, punishment sure to follow. The bailiff stared down at the small figure held firmly before him by a brawny man-at-arms. The dirty, narrow face showed a mixture of fear and defiance. However, the body's posture was one of hopelessness. The bailiff could tell that the scrawny little guttersnipe knew he was guilty. Break. Well, here, right off the bat, in Chapter 2, we're giving an example of the justice system in Greyhawk, at least for the poor. We have a justice, so we have a bailiff, we have a man-at-arms. So, you know, here we have, just to begin with, if these are not classes, at least they're professions and jobs within the city. And it starts to give you an example of how Gygax thought the justice should work in the city of Greyhawk. All right, restart. Page 17, paragraph 2. Ward, dweller in the slum quarter of the old city, I find you guilty of grand theft. You are fortunate indeed that the goods were recovered, for otherwise you would suffer flogging and then the axe, or worse. Lucky too, thief, that this is your first time caught, else I'd see your hand forfeit. Low justice prescribes your fate. I sentence you to 3 years in the workhouse in penal servitude. The bailiff concluded, pointing his ceremonial mace at Gord, take the scum away. Break. All right. Now, we have an example of how the court is addressing Gord, dweller in the slum quarter of the old city. The mention of grand theft as a charge, and then the punishments, such as flogging, the axe, the removal of the hand of a thief. And then we have that this is low justice, and which is a, you know, one of the medieval forms of low and high middle justices that they had. It's hard to tell exactly what Gygax means by low justice, but I would assume that it is probably the most commonplace definition of it that you could find historically. There's a workhouse, penal servitude, that the bailiff has a ceremonial mace that he holds. And here I am, I'm correcting myself from the first paragraph. There isn't a justice. It is the bailiff who is is serving as a justice kind of thing. Justice is simply the point being taken that justice was swift in the first paragraph.
One of the things one of the things that I liked about the City of Greyhawk box set is that it went into quite detail, well, reasonable detail about what was legal and not legal in the city, but also the justice system, and it detailed what punishments were for certain crimes, and I really enjoyed that. So it's interesting that the book and its punishment is congruent with what was discussed in that box set. It's the work, being sentenced to the workhouse for someone that is young and committing petty theft was not petty theft, but committing theft was it agrees
grand
with that
theft,
box set.
Although grand theft seems pretty the value of the piece would have to be a certain value normally, but there's grand theft. And then the bailiff, who I didn't think would be the one in judgment, is the one in judgment at this. bearing a ceremonial mace. All right. This predates
was
the
it,
boss.
Was it the, I know it was the bailiff that pointed the ceremonial mace at him and told him to go away, but was it the bailiff that rendered the judgment? I'm not sure. Are they two different people there?
Yes. It's the bailiff and a man at arms. I mistakenly thought that when they said justice, they meant a justice instead of justice in the first paragraph. So the bailiff is actually the one in judgment sitting there as a judge. The man at arms is doing what a modern bailiff would do in that he's holding, he's the one to control Gord, you know, a brawny man at arms was holding on to Gord so he doesn't flee or attack the bailiff. I'm not sure if that is the medieval definition of a bailiff here. The other thing, of course, is that there is a workhouse and penal servitude, which I'm not sure if those are actually medieval terminology or things from a later time period. It doesn't really matter. This is not historical. This is a fantasy city which has magic. And the magic, it doesn't mean that they're going to follow, medieval society. In fact, they really shouldn't be following medieval society because of the way that they should be different, at the very least, you know, a little bit different. All right. So I'm going to restart. Page 17. Paragraph 3. Shaking his head in disgusted bewilderment over how such creatures could be allowed to survive for a dozen years, the bailiff prepared himself for the next case. Gord wasn't surprised at being punished, nor was he particularly upset by the official's harsh words. In fact, he was pleased by the result. Luck, Gord thought. I'm lucky for once. For stealing as he had, Gord could have lost a hand. But the bailiff had ruled that all he had to do was work for a bit, and he'd be fed for it. Somehow, Gord reasoned, the powers above had seen him as fit and useful for something, no matter that his lot was to be a convicted criminal and workhouse slave. Gord was jubilant at the thought of being seen worthy of something, even penal servitude. With something in my belly, I'll show them, Gord thought. If only it had been as easy as that. Break. All right, well, you know, definitely Gord isn't really mistaken as he's starving in the slum quarter. He's at the risk of beatings and death by the gang that rules it. And as bad as things may end up being, they don't seem to be much worse than life for a 12-year-old small orphan alone in the slum quarter. We have an example here where the bailiff is shocked and disgusted over Gord, feels no empathy for a 12-year-old orphan. It's a picture of the city of Greyhawk, I believe, that is a little more harsh than is commonly seen in a lot of the later lore that comes out in the supplements of the game. All right, I'm going to restart. This is page 18. Paragraph 3. The workhouse was grim. It was a prison converted from its original use as a guard barracks, back when the city was smaller. It was centuries old. Damp and must permeated the place, as did the stink of unwashed bodies. Lice and vermin thrived inside its walls, but prisoners did not. Sunlight scarcely entered so foul a structure. And if the prisoners were the dregs of Greyhawk, then the guards, to judge by their demeanor, were worse still. Fortunately for Gord, inmates were stored by size and strength so as to assign suitable work to each group. Had he been thrown in with the larger and stronger prisoners, he wouldn't have survived the bullying, sodomizing, and worse. As it was, put in a group of prisoners more or less his peers, Gord imagined that the denizens of the Hells could learn a lesson from this place. He and his fellow sufferers were roused every morning at first light, given dirty water and a moldy crust of bread, then put to some backbreaking or painful task, such as clearing narrow sewer drains or scrubbing acid vats. At least there was a brief march to the work area, which provided a short dose of sunlight and fresh air. The crew was worked for 6 hours, then given a half hour to consume their main meal of the day, porridge or gruel containing rancid fat and bits of fortunately unidentifiable things. Break. Well, that does depict a much, much harsher Greyhawk and a little more adult Greyhawk than we see in the box set. We have a description of the workhouse, and basing this on the map that is provided in City of Hawks, it puts the idea where this must have been, as there is a area that was the old guard barracks and prison to the east of Old City, across the river that in Gygax's version of the city runs up along the east of the city. We are given a little description of what they eat, how terrible it is, how they break down the prisoners, and some of the jobs that they're forced to do while they're in the workhouse. It all goes to atmosphere and background. And if you're going to be running a campaign, it also gives you some idea of what you could do to structure something as starting zero level characters out in the workhouse, or having a prison riot or a breakout. So there's a lot of useful game material in this larger half page paragraph on page 18 here. Now, it should be commented that porridge or gruel was actually a very common for the Roman soldiers back at the end of the Republic and beginning of the Empire, when they were all foot soldiers. That porridge and gruel, they were there every day. They ate that for every meal of the day, with various things put in with it. And that Roman soldiers would even mutiny if they had run out of their gruel or porridge, because they knew that supplies would be low. So if they started living off the land and were given fresh meat and no gruel or porridge to go along with it, then they'd realize that they'd run out of their supplies and it could lead to a mutiny. All right. This is going to be a restart. Page 18, last paragraph. At dusk, all outside labor ended. Groups from various parts of the city were quick marched back to the workhouse and redeposited in their respective common cells. If they cleaned these places up properly, they would then receive watery broth and a bit of weevil-ridden bread for supper. If even one member of a group of cellmates made any trouble, all went hungry. A troublemaker didn't live long unless he was the biggest and strongest in the lot. Even then, the guard soon saw to it that his work and discipline wore him down, and the inmates themselves did the rest, until the malcontent was eventually carried out one morning with the night soil buckets. Break. All right, well, again, we're given more information about how they operate the workhouse, how they bring the people back, how they maintain discipline by having the people, the people in the cells, the prisoners themselves, handle the worst of the discipline problems. There's a little bit about the food. It makes you wonder if they have special bread put aside just so it can become weevil ridden, if they're given it every day. And, you know, the weevils at least add some protein to their bread. Let's see. I'm really not seeing anything else. It gives more atmosphere, and it gives a few specifics on how the workhouse was run. All right, restart. Page 19, paragraph 2. Nights were the worst time of all. There was little light in the small, damp cells, even when the sun was high. As darkness fell, the place became a lightless hell. Shrieks and cries echoed through the corridors, mingled with insane laughter and the groans of the sick and dying. There were activities going on in other places within the workhouse, things that Gord had heard of but didn't want to think about, and he was glad enough to be in even so small a place, a cell for some of the weakest and most harmless residents. He found a small space for himself, scraped together a bit of moldering, stinking straw for a bed, and stayed there whenever he could. Gord kept to himself and spoke to nobody unless he had to. The vermin were hungry and aggressive, but they were an inconvenience, not a threat. Rats and huge centipedes were another thing altogether. He learned to sleep very lightly and to jump up fully awake at the slightest rustling. Each new prisoner quickly learned to make himself a small weapon to employ against attacks by rats or centipedes. Gord had a sharply pointed stick about a foot long. This weapon kept him safe, even though he could not usually kill anything with it, for any wounded predator was promptly attacked and devoured by the other scavengers, or sometimes by the occupants of the cell. Break. All right, well, you know, we're given more about the, you know, horribleness of and the atmosphere of the workhouse cells, you know, the terrible things that went on at nights, the utter blackness of it, the sounds of the laughter and the groans of the sick and dying and the other things. You know, Gord is in the area where he's in the cell for the weakest and most harmless. But still, you know, the threat of the rats and I would guess probably almost a monstrous form of centipede. So here we see part of Gord's character development, if you're looking at, you know, background for how the common character turns into a zero-level character or eventually becomes a first-level character. Here we have Gord, you know, every night or all, you know, through the night, fighting off rats and huge centipedes, which, you know, in the game mechanics would have him developing combat skills. All right. Restart. Page 19, paragraph 4. After a few days of imprisonment, Gord had completely overcome his initial shock and horror, and he began to think, if actual escape was not possible, then how could he better his condition? The others confined with him were a mixed bag indeed. Old women, children, even an ancient gnome seemingly near death. In the time he had been in the workhouse, only one sickly boy had died in the cell, and some stringy-haired girl had been incautious and was killed by a fall into an acid vat. That wasn't exactly encouraging to Gord, no matter how he turned it over in his mind. Gord wasn't robust, and who knew when fatigue would make him careless? Something had to be done fast. Break. Well, I mean, this is the first mention that who they have in, the old women, the children, and that even a demi-human gnome is imprisoned within that workhouse. You know, though they're mentioned in the foreign quarter, so far the Gord experience with the slum quarter and there's been mostly, it's been human beings. And we've only had a few other player races mentioned where really there's just more about in this paragraph, which is just more atmosphere. But it does say that in the workhouse, there's only been two fatalities so far. It really does seem like the slum quarter, as bad as the workhouse is, the slum quarter still seems worse. At least for Gord. All right, restart. Page 19, last paragraph. He considered his world, fellow prisoners, the cell room, the guard. Only one prospect seemed to offer any possibility. If he could somehow be assigned to a still weaker group, the one composed of the nearly feeble and the maimed. Then he thought his work would be lighter and certainly not dangerous. Gord had seen the line of shuffling, hopping, crutch-supported workers from the floor beneath his cell, being led to and from a workroom within the prison itself. This idea offered promise. Break. All right, now, here we're introduced, my mistake, that there is actually another level below Gord of on that little social ladder there, that the maimed and the injured and the nearly dead are even separated even further from where Gord has been kept with old women and children, that they're, you know, they're working within the workhouse itself and not being let out. It's questionable about Gord's reasoning here that it would be better to be among these. He's surviving in this existence, and if he is able to go to a place where he is not the worst injured, he might be one of the stronger ones. All right, restart. Page 20, paragraph 2. Gord did not seriously consider maiming himself to get into the group, but his aversion to pain and infirmity was not the main reason. He had heard that self-inflicted disability brought a whipping and a consignment to a dungeon cell for the condemned, where neither food nor water were to be had. Supposedly, the rat-gnawed bones of the former tenant were removed by the newcomer as part of the final lesson to be learned. Gord shuddered at the thought of slow death by thirst and starvation, while rats nibbled off toes and fingers. So injury was out. Likewise, weakness couldn't be feigned, and neither could age. That left only sickness. But in the workhouse, there was no care for the ill. No cleric, no physician, no medicine, nothing. Prisoners either got better or died. Those unable to work were not fed, although a companion might share water and a morsel of food. A stupid thing to do, thought Gord, for it only increased the benefactor's chance of being the next to go. To be safe, he had to be sick in a special way, still able to work, but so sick as to be unable to do anything but the least strenuous sort of labor. He thought for a while longer, and then Gord had his plan. Break. All right. Well, we're given the example here in the workhouse of the final stage of for prisoners and for the condemned to be starved and dehydrated to death, as well as continually more of the attacks by the aggressive rats. you know, I mean, it does keep painting this dark, dark picture of Greyhawk society. So that the poorest and, you know, the most helpless members of that society, it seems, are treated very terribly. Now, the other thing that's worth noting in this is in the workhouse, there was no care for the ill, no cleric, physician, medicine. So we have the acknowledgement of the clerical, probably clerical magic of healing, but we also have a non-clerical physician and medicine, which isn't something that is generally brought up much in a lot of fantasy D&D setting stuff that I've seen, where there is also that going to a cleric may not be an option, and that there would be room in these worlds for physicians and medicines, whether they're skilled or quacks. There's still something that a 12-year-old Gord from the slum quarter is aware of as existing in Greyhawk. All right. Now I'm going to restart. This is page 20, and it is the fourth paragraph. The turnkey came at dawn as usual, heralded by the sound of his huge iron key grating in the massive lock, while the waiting guard thumped his truncheon against the oaken door. Everyone would be awake when the portal swung open and food was doled out. A large man carried the water butt, while a crone parceled out the bread from the sack she toted. Nobody noticed Gord, the last in line, until he came near the trustees. The old woman lurched back with a shriek, and the water bearer looked pale at the sight of the boy. Gord's eyes were red-rimmed and watering. He sniveled and wiped absently at the mucus dripping from his nose. His face, body, and extremities were marked by scabby sores. All right, break. All right, now here, we're given this look at Gord, who is further learning how to disguise himself, which Gord, who is not quite a thief, and eventually becomes, I believe, something like a tumbler, that is kind of like a rogue tumbler, I guess. He is, right from the start, it is more background to show where his nascent skills are developing from. And, of course, Gord, as an exceptional character, has these abilities are very successful. You know, he's able to disguise himself. He disguises himself very quickly as one of the people who would be in the menial quarter by stealing some clothing. And then he disguises himself here as someone who has some kind of plague or disease. And we're, as far as the setting information, we're, here's a turnkey and a guard. The cell is locked by a massive lock with an oaken door and a huge iron key. But then the man carrying the water butt and the crone are both described as trustees. So that again describes how the prison, the workhouse, operates, using the trustees to do the work even of feeding the other prisoners. All right, restart. Page 20, last paragraph. The little bugger's got the plague, the hag screeched. Keep him away from me. The turnkey and the guard looked at Gord, who smiled weakly at them, shrugging, and then looked at each other. Yarm, the turnkey, scratched his head and offered a diagnosis. It do look kind of like blood pox, Clyde, but he ain't wobbling and twitching like they do. He scratched his head again, knocking his steel cap awry. Come here, boy, commanded Clyde, the guard. He watched Gord approach hesitantly. Gord was careful not to wobble or twitch, because blood pox was a serious malady indeed, too serious for his purpose. He advanced slowly to within a couple of paces of the men without touching him. Both guard and Kernkey looked closely at him. Now Yarm was stumped. Now, here we have a description of a plague and a disease. Here's something to add to the Greyhawk lore of blood pox. A disease that I would assume is similar to earthly diseases, but within the city and within Greyhawk, we have that something like a plague or a disease isn't just easily eradicated. The clerics are not coming around making sure that it's gone from at least the poor. But here we have something common enough for both the guard and turnkey to be able to think, to recognize by sight.
I like the part. Right? I like the part when he smiles and shrugs. It's just like,
oh. Yeah.
It's like an interesting piece of his character.
I know. It's a little out of place there, but and here we're again, it's more to the atmosphere of this, of Gygax's city, which is, he used this alignment system in the game, and so far most of the people in authority here would have severe alignment problems if they followed, a lot of the way people see. I don't think many of these would make it to the anywhere, any kind of good alignment.
No.
We're given two names for the guards, but they're kind. I don't think Yarm, Y-A-R-M, that Gygax just didn't pull out of his head, but we're given two named characters. I'm going to continue. This is page 21. He vanquished his ocean gourd out of the cell and pointed toward a niche in the corridor and up. A pended crate now and around the corner. In the meantime, Yarm had moved on, as had the crone and the water bearer. Gord and the guard were alone. Break. Well, something that I immediately noticed was none of the prisoners got to eat or drink. That seemed to be a pretty quick reaction there, unless they would be given the food as they were in line. But it didn't seem like they were given very much time to eat that main meal of the day of theirs.
I thought that was after they worked 5 hours or something.
No. Looking back, the turnkey on page 20, the second paragraph to the last, the turnkey came at dawn as usual. And then immediately it's the large man carrying the water butt and the crone with the sack of bread.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I would think they're mentioned that they are given gruel or porridge. That seems like a more substantial meal, actually, but that is, I believe they said that morning was their main meal of the day. All right. Now, they've got their Work parties going out in chain and leg irons. So we can picture them moving through the city, you know, in little groups coming from the workhouse and then out to places within the city in their little rows of chain gang, chained and leg ironed prisoners. All right. Now, you know, we're given some more explanation of how, what their system is in the morning. So, you know, if you're running the campaign and you want to set it up for a breakout or for something, here we have what would they be their day-to-day, how they're fed, how they're treated in the morning, and how they're set to go out and do their work parties. All right. Restart. Page 21, last paragraph. Although he had not moved his body, Gord had watched every move that Clyde made. Did anything in his bearing hint that he suspected Gord's deception? It hadn't been easy to make himself look sick. Finding a mold that caused his eyes and nose to be irritated and runny was not too hard, but the sores had been another thing altogether. His head had ached with concentration, and he had nearly given up in despair before the idea of bedbugs struck him. Gord had had to spend half the night carefully feeling around for them and placing them in the desired location on his face and body. Their bites didn't hurt much, but he had had to fight to keep from crying out in pain when he rubbed the irritating mold stuff into the wounds the vermin had left. Gord had hoped that the trick would work, but he hadn't suspected that the ruse would be so effective as to resemble blood pox. You survived that disease without clerical attention. Break. All right. Now, you know, there's a couple things. Now, I had understood that you couldn't see bed bugs. I would assume that he's talking about either a large fantasy version, maybe dire bed bugs, or else just using bed bugs as a generic term for the kind of bugs that would infest his moldy straw that he slept on. It is a good example, though, of how Gord is using his intelligence and his early thieving skill to work on that disguise. And it's something that immediately shows what an exceptional individual Gord is. The last thing to note would be that blood pox is normally a disease that cannot be treated without clerical attention, normally. Few survived blood pox without clerical attention. All right. Restart, page 22, paragraph 2. Gord had a feeling that the guard had not paid any attention to the turnkey's opinion that the disease was not blood pox. Yet at the same time, he was puzzled by the guard's lack of concern about possibly being exposed to that terrible disease. All the others in the vicinity had hurried away as quickly as possible, murmuring prayers to whatever deity they adhered to. Gord's thoughts turned from excitement to apprehension. He was now really afraid that he had gone too far. If they thought he actually had anything like blood pox, he'd be killed and his body burned. No argument, no reprieve, the end. If he admitted to his deception, then the end would come just as certainly, but more slowly. Starvation in the dungeon would be his fate. Break. All right. You know, I mean, we're given more about a little more about Gord, and you know, he really his ability to really think through these problems. And very quickly, too. But also picking out an inconsistency in what the process, the thought process of the guard. Now let's see. The only other thing I really see that's worth commenting on, besides the treatment that they just kill and burn the bodies of those with blood pox, would be about the prayers to whatever deity adhered to. That it's like a very common thing that the people will call on the various Greyhawk setting deities, whatever they might be in their locale. Nothing specific is mentioned, so it seems like it's. I get the feeling that it is a variety of deities that the different people are calling upon.
Yeah, he was aware and comfortable with the fact that there were many known gods.
Yeah, and that it also seems a very commonplace thing that you would find, just people. That the belief in the deities is ingrained in the population. That's the feeling I get. I'm definitely reading a little into this, but it is a feeling that I get from the context.
Right.
All right. Restart. Page 22, paragraph 3. Clyde took a seat on a bench nearby and began scratching with a quill on a bit of parchment, only bothering to glance at Gord once in a while. Gord was amazed that the guard knew how to write. After several minutes of scratching and peering at the parchment, Clyde seemed satisfied with what he had on the scrap of material. He tucked it back in his jerkin and let out a shrill whistle. In a couple of moments, another guard appeared from around the corner. Well, I'm going to break here because I think it is worth noting that the guard is able to read and write. I don't know if they've mentioned whether Gord himself had ever learned to read or write.
I don't think he did.
Yeah, I don't think it's been mentioned, and I'm not sure if he ever did. I know later on it might be mentioned, but right now I really don't know if that is a case. I don't think there's... he also is continuing to note that the guard's actions are unexpected. All right. Restart. Page 22. Paragraph 4. "What's up, Clyde?" the new fellow inquired. "Morning, Roke. Nothing much. Just need you to stand my station for an hour or two, whilst I take care of getting shucked of this sickie." "Zork!" cried the startled Roke, as he got a good look at the huddled boy in the niche. "That bird's got blood pox." Break. Now, I break here. Not so much because it's the introduction of another named character, an odd name, Roke, but I think the thing that most gets me to note is what Zork is. It's an exclamation, but is it a deity? Is it a swear word? Is it an explicative? It is. It is a surprising little word there that I think is one of those. We talked about it like a little toss-away mention that I have no idea what Zork actually means. I don't think it's ever mentioned again in this setting. All right. I'm going to restart. Page 22, paragraph 6. Paragraph 7. "Ah," Clyde drawled reassuringly as he arose. "It looks a lot like blood pox, but the little chump has a plague that's only catching if he consorts with corpses, if you get my meaning, Roke." "No shit. That creep got that from messing with a stiff. Wow." Shaking his head and looking at Gord with utter disgust, the fellow plopped down in Clyde's spot. "Loud, you have to take care of the slime bucket. See you in a couple of hours or so, pal. Break. Well, I mean, it is amusing that in this terrible society that having sex with a corpse is something that even disgusts the jailers in the workhouse, who are kind of like the worst of the worst. They again, here is more mention of blood pox. But it's also obvious that this little chump has a plague. So there are several different kinds of diseases, enough so that Clyde can just come up with one at the top of his head and be accepted without really any question that here is another disease. And that kind of says to me that the city of Greyhawk in the poorer sections, like the workhouse, the slum quarter, that they are, you know, probably redolent with diseases, and that it is untreated plagues and diseases, as they might have been in a poor medieval city, are also something that you can find here in the Gem of the Flaness.
Yeah, and lots of people get them.
Yes, and they're beneath the care of even the clerics of the religions who are maybe not common in the city or just overwhelmed with the numbers, you know, of the people in the city. But we don't hear about, when he talks about the slum quarters, there's no missions that are mentioned. There's no, you know, there's no good aligned religions mentioned that have headquarters in the slum quarters. So far, the city is a pretty bad place, you know, in the worst section of it. So much different from, I think, I always felt a little more cookie cutter or, you know, more candy box place like the City of Greyhawk box set, which I think was trying maybe for a younger audience. And Gygax certainly was trying to write something for a mature audience. I just don't think, you know, it really kind of comes out that way. I mean, he mentions things, but I don't think it really talks about a mature novel as much as one that uses some, you know, very, you know, graphic or shocking detail.
Right.
All right. Now I'm going to restart. Page 23, paragraph 2. Clyde motioned for Gord to get up, throwing him a cruel wink that indicated he should be afraid of what was in store for him, and then gestured for him to head down the corridor while he followed. "I'd bash his brains in myself, Roke," said Clyde over his shoulder as they moved away, "but that might infect my club. I'll just leave it up to." And by then they were out of the short corridor and heading down a set of stairs, and Clyde didn't bother to finish the sentence. Gord thought about trying to run away, but there was no way he could have succeeded. In spite of himself, he began to quiver with fear. His eyes darted from side to side, and he even began to take small steps away from the guard. Clyde saw that his charge was near complete panic, so he muttered softly, "Stop it, you stupid punk. In a minute, you're going to blow the whole thing for both of us." Break. All right. Well, here we have that Gord's suspicions were correct. I mean, it was pretty well telegraphed. But here, there's something going on. The guard obviously, you know, Clyde, he obviously doesn't believe that Gord has blood pox. And there's something that he has an idea. So you can see that within the workhouse, there's motivations and undercurrents. It isn't just a straightforward workhouse where everyone's terrible. There's also other things going on within the workhouse that are a little sub rosa, beneath the notice of the bailiff or the warden or whoever is managing the workhouse itself. I don't think here, I really, there's a little brief description of, you know, short corridor heading down a set of stairs. I mean, it's really just a little bit of description without any reference. So it doesn't really paint you a map or a picture of the cells to the corridor to the set of stairs. It doesn't really give you much information.
I think it connects like the lower jail with the upper offices or something, but yeah, but other than that, not too much.
Yeah, and it really, at this point, now, I'll start again here, or do a restart. Page 23, paragraph 4. Now, Gord was more puzzled still, but the utter fear that had been washing over him subsided enough for him to remain in control of it. Soon they were at the front gate of the prison. Clyde handed over the document he had scratched out moments earlier, and the sentries passed them through without word or question. Gord could scarcely believe what was happening. In a few minutes, the workhouse was lost from sight as they walked briskly into the thieves' quarter. Break. All right, well, that actually, that does, you know, here we're talking about, you know, the corridor, the stairs down. Well, very shortly, he's at the front gate. So obviously those cells are not very far from the central, the front gate exit entrance to the workhouse. And then we, that the workhouse, it does go out of sight, but they're very briskly, a few minutes walking, and they are into the thieves' quarter.
And maybe that corridor is so small and narrow to prevent like a prison breakout or something like that.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe, you know, it's small corridor, but still surprisingly close.
Mm-hmm.
It is the corridor that has the sickest people, you know, other than, not the sickest. Now, actually, Gord's never moved to that one, which is below him. You know, mm-hmm. I should have mentioned previously that that area where the sick and the ill and the maimed were kept, Gord mentions that was below him. And I missed mentioning that in a, noting that down in the paragraph where it was mentioned. But this is the court, this is the cell that contained the old women, the children, and some of the weakest other than the maimed who didn't actually even leave the workhouse. So that cell might be kept near the front entrance just because they're not able to make it deeper into the, or also because they're the least dangerous of their prisoners. You know, they're kept closest to the outside for a few reasons, you know, to save them a little strength, but also because they're the least likely to make an escape of it. All right, I'm going to restart. Page 23, final paragraph. Gord tried to find out what was happening and where they were going. His first set of questions was ignored, and when he tried again a couple of minutes later, he got a slap on the side of the head for his effort. Obviously, the guard was not going to tell him anything more, and from moment to moment, Gord's confused emotions vacillated between optimism and apprehension. After a walk of some distance, they came to a stop in front of a huge, old, dilapidated building, and still the guard said nothing. Break. Well, that is the end of Chapter 2. And as well, I'm going to make a few comments here, but we're at 6:53. So we're coming to a close for today's reading. There's really, I mean, there's not much in this last paragraph except a description of the old, huge, old, dilapidated building. Now, it would seem, looking at the last paragraph, that that building is within the thieves' quarter. You know, we're really not given any more information. We know that there's something odd going on. We do know that the guards were able to either recognize a written note or were able to read it themselves from the last paragraph. So, here we are. I think that's all I can really pull out of this so far. And that is going to be the end of tonight's reading. Anybody have any comments?
I guess going back to what you were saying about alignment, it seems like most people are neutral
or evil.
Yeah, or straight up evil. I just don't want to call them that yet, but yeah, they could be.
I don't think, I mean, there have been characters we've encountered in the two chapters here who aren't necessarily evil. Mm-hmm. It does seem that neutral seems to be very, but this is, the examples are the people who deal either with the worst conditions, living in the slum quarter, or the laborers, menial laborers, who are living on the edge of the slum quarter and have to protect themselves from all the terrors of the slum quarter. We're going to the foreign quarter, but nobody's really detailed there. So, you know, we encounter halflings and Renee. And so we really, you know, we don't know right there. I see that...
Yeah, I posted the map.
Yeah, the map's posted. Yes, I misplaced the Thieves' Quarter. I was thinking that they were talking about the workhouse being on the old guard, on that island.
It says that it's in X, but I don't see it. It says the prison workhouse is X, and I don't see it on that map.
I think it might be... that little square between the low and the thieves' quarter, the okay. L and the T. Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Wait a minute, right, the B, well, that's beggar's quarter.
Yeah, well, it's right
we're,
there.
We're jumping ahead here. I should mention that we're jumping ahead to look at the city box map.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier, so I searched.
It is a shame that it wasn't put into Saga of Old City. City of Hawks, to jump ahead, is kind of a restart. It kind of retells the story that we have at the beginning here in Saga of Old City.
Yeah, it goes in depth a little bit more.
Yeah. All right, well, we may end up editing out the commentary on the city map here. But I don't know. I think it's fine.
Yeah, it's good.
Getting just close to 7, so I'm going to close it out here.
All right, well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I will say that the City of Hawk map seems to be, when the map that Gygax is using for Saga of Old City seems to be the map from this beginning of City of Hawks. The book novel he wrote later on, City of Hawks. And it would have been very useful to have that map in this book. But I think when we're reading these descriptions, I think the whole setup... Now, it's worth noting that this map is completely different from the City of Greyhawk box map put out by TSR. Mm. This is a completely different map. And I happen to favor this map, but the books that we're reading, they're using the City of Hawks map and not the City of Greyhawk box set map.
Hmm.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. And I'm going to see if this works. And good night.